Okay, so as per popular request, we are basically going to wrap up our studies of Gehenna this morning, and we are going to begin our studies of Gan Eden, because we spend so much time talking about the doom and gloom and where all the, people with sins wind up, that we didn't really spend much time talking about where I hope all of us are going to wind up in the end of the day. So I'm sure we're curious to know where the vacation spot is for all of us after in the afterlife. So let me just wrap up a piece from what we did last time, the end of Gehenna of what we're studying, and then we'll move on to talk about Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden, which we'll take the next few classes together. How does that sound?
Much better.
Okay, much better, right? We'll get to get some happier stuff. Okay, so let me pull up a document. Let's see. Screen share is on. The screen share is, there we go. So we are, I think, 3 pages away from finishing this discussion about Kares, this discussion about Gehenna, as far as we are going to go. Okay, let me just get the right place. Okay, so last time what we talked about was we were trying to prove that there's no in between. Usually when someone dies, they either go to Gan Eden or they go to Gehenna. It's one or the other. Though we did talk about last time how there was this idea called a Gilgal. So if we recall, a Gilgal is this Kabbalistic idea that certain people, for whatever reason, maybe they aren't good enough to get into Gan Eden, but they're also not bad enough to stay in Gehenna. They come back into this world in order to amend whatever evil they've committed, make up for whatever sins they committed, ultimately to get into Gan Eden, hopefully. So that was something we discussed last time, but it was all in the context of figuring out this idea of whether we go straight to Gehenna and Gan Eden or whether there's something in between. And Ramban believes there's no in between, there's no intermediate stage. The last part of this actually is relevant not just for theology, but for davening as well. So does anyone know why we say, it may have been a while since many of us were in shul on Matzei Shabbos on a Saturday night, but do you know what we say after? So we have Shema, Shmona Esrei during Maariv, then it's followed by Kaddish. And do you know what we say after that Kaddish on a Saturday night?
I do, but I can't remember what it's called.
So it's V'hi Noam. And
Right, yep.
then we say Yoshe B'Seser. And then we say, I guess what you might call Valetzion, but minus that beginning part. So why do we say that on Saturday night? It seems to be, a lot of us are sitting in shul. And if it's one of those longer summer Shabbosim, we're just waiting to turn on our phones. We're waiting to jump out and take a shower Saturday night, whatever it might be that's on our mind. But then all of a sudden we have this, you can almost imagine it's like a comic. You're ready to run out of shul, and then V'hi Noam says, just wait a moment. You have to say V'hi Noam first. So what is this? What are these extra paragraphs doing? That they're taking up extra time? And yes.
Just a point. Are you referring only to the Yehi Noam paragraph? Because the Uval Etzion we say every day.
Well, Uval Tzion is said at Shacharis. We don't say it at
Right.
Maariv. It's
Right.
not
So
very much.
what you're talking about is only the Yehi Noam part.
Right.
Okay.
In fact, that Uval Tzion, I think, got shortened a little bit for Tircha V'Tzibur purposes, which we may see in a future class. So this I actually referenced in one of the Tircha V'Tzibur classes that we learned a few weeks ago for those who were there. But if you missed it, I'll rehash it right now. Mefurish Amru Ba'agada, so in the Medrash it says, B'chol Erev Shabbos Dome Sar Hamamuna Al Hanafashos. There is this angel, his name is Dume or Dome. He is the angel who is appointed over the souls of the wicked. So on every Erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos begins, Machriz V'omer Hanach Lehem L'Rashayim Ha'elu V'yanuchu. He declares that now it is Shabbos, and we will give the wicked respite. We will give them a time to rest from their suffering. Manichim osam kol haShabbos kula. And so Shabbos is their one day during the week that they get to rest from the torment and suffering that they have in Gehenna. However, at the end of Shabbos, Mamotzi Shabbos, Imcha Shecha, as it gets dark, as Shabbos comes to a close, Soe Kamalach Shumamuna Al Haruchos, Chazu Lachem Rishayin L'Gehenim. Then the angel appointed over the spirits declares, return these wicked back to Gehenna. Their time of respite is done. Shekvar Yishlimi Yisrael Sidrehen. Because once we finish davening, that is the end, the official final end of Shabbos. And therefore, the wicked have to return once we're done. So if you're in a shul that, you know, I'm not really sure how they figured this out, because, you know, some shuls, you know, take 10 minutes from Marv, some shuls take like 18 minutes from Marv. So I'm not really sure, you know, who they're depending on over here when they figure out the Zmanim and Gehenim. But therefore, the custom of the Jewish people is, L'kach Yisrael maskir mesir motzi Shabbos v'omen v'hinoam Hashem alakenu aleinu. Therefore, why do we say v'hinoam? We say it because it buys the Rishayim a little extra time so that they could stay outside of Gehenim. So we take one for the team. We sacrifice a little of our time on Matzei Shabbos on Saturday night in order to benefit, in order to extend the respite of the Rishayim, of the wicked, who do not want to return to Gehenna. So it's very fascinating. You know, I've been saying this on Saturday nights for who knows how long, but I never realized that was the reason behind it. I would never have thought that. So if you look over here in the Chazon Yoel, he talks about extending davening on Matzei Shabbos. So the source of this comes in the Siddur D'Rav Amram. There's certain, you know, before we had an art scroll in Koren, there were a number of ancient Sidurim of the Gaonim that's what we look back at to figure out what is the order of davening. So according to Rav Amram, Zesh Nagu Lomar V'Hinoam U'Kedusha D'Sidra, and then we say Kedusha, right, in the Quasi Valet Zion. We start with Vatakadosh. Benima Barichus Noam. So the thing is, though, he seems to say that we should be, the idea is to extend the prayers. But if you look, actually, he points out, the Chazino says, when you look back at the Ramban, he doesn't say to extend the prayers. What does he say? He says, Maskirin. We recite it. We say it. Va'omrin. But he doesn't have the word, he doesn't have the Lashon Ma'arichin that we extend. Instead, there are boundaries. This is why we say V'yinoam. We're supposed to, as an Arichus, we're supposed to extend it out to give the Rishayim more time. But according to Ramban, yeah, we should say it, but you should recite it like you recite any other prayer. So, but don't take longer than it needs to be said, which I believe is our custom in Agud Hashem, at least, you know, for most people leading davening, from what I can tell. So that's the secret behind V'hinoam. Now, what's the point of this? He's bringing this up just to tell us about how Gehenna works. So people may go immediately to Gehenna after they die, but there's still, even for the wicked, there's a built-in respite each and every Shabbos. And that's why we have that extra davening at the end of Matzei Shabbos to give these Rishayim a little bit more time. So he concludes this section by saying, so we learn from all this, everything we learned last time and just at the end of this time as well, that when the wicked die, their souls get judged and go straight to Gehenna. Based on what they earned. Based on everything that we said. This is the belief of all of those who have adhered to the words of our rabbis, Omamen Bekabalasam, or believe in that tradition. Vimasha Pirashnu Lo Yarchik Divraim Echami Bali Ha'ion Ahamishtabish Mehem Oharasha Hamisvaker. So the only people who do not believe this, he says, are people who are confused, who are misled, or the wicked who have denied our tradition. But the Rabban says, this is my presentation of the Jewish belief of how Gehenna works. There is more to this section, but I think we covered a lot of the essential material, and it's time for us to move on to greener pastures, quite literally, and to talk about Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. So before we move on, let me just pause for a moment Do we have any questions that we feel like we left unanswered about Gehenna? Any concluding thoughts that any of us want to share before we move on? Okay.
So I have a question. So how is all of this stuff derived on Gehenna?
Okay, so that's a good question.
You're saying levels, all that stuff.
Okay, good. So if you look back, that's a good question. That's important because I don't want us to walk out if you're thinking Ramban just made this all up, yesh me'ayin, out of nowhere. If you throughout the Ramban, if you could take a look at this screen, I'll highlight a few things. So if you look over here, the most recent thing we read, he cites a medrash. So this is an ancient rabbinic text. And throughout the entire time, he quotes over here, a medrash Tehillim. Over here, a Gemara in Chagiga, Tesvav Amid Aleph. So if you look throughout Ramban, there, here again, a Gemara in Bava Basra. He is citing Chazal. Now, you could ask, that kicks the can down the road. How did the rabbis know of all these details? That's a good question as well. But as far as Ramban is concerned, he is, he's really, you know, he takes a position on certain things, but for the most part, again, here we go, Gemara in Maseches Tainus. He's really worked, he's really built up in the sources. He's well-rooted in the sources. Every section, essentially, is based on a different source. Again, here, Gemara Kiddushin. So I have to sometimes like gloss over. I don't always mention exactly where he's deriving each thing from. But it's important to notice that when you see these citations, which are replete throughout the Ramban, he is really taking our Masorah, he's taking our rabbinic texts, the ancient rabbinic texts of our tradition, and he's asking, and what he's trying to do is, he's trying to structure it systematically to create a broader understanding and vision of these questions of theology. Because when you look at Chazal, the same way when you learn Gemara for halachic purposes, the Gemara is a series of conversations. So you're not going to open up one Masechta and explain, you know, even if you learn Maseches Brachos, you're still going to find material in Brachos that will, you'll find in other Masechtas as well. If you learn Tzubos, you're going to learn about Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Yom Tov in there, even though it's about, you know, marital laws. So similarly, what Rambam did and what many others did was they had to codify the Gemara into, you know, the Mishnah Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, the Torah, etc., so that there was an order to things. Ramban is trying to do something like that for not for halacha, but for theology. He's taking all of these scattered Gemaras and Midrashim, all these scattered statements of the rabbis, and he's trying to make a systematic order and explain what the broader vision of the rabbis are. So sometimes there will be holes. There will be details that the rabbis didn't fill us in on. So that's where the Ramban will give us his opinion. And as we note, we try to note when he gives his own opinion, because many times he'll be in disagreement with the Rambam, and he'll be in disagreement with many other scholars. So that's to address your, does that address the question?
Yes, it addressed my question, but then my real question is not he's commenting on what others have said, but the people who first said this stuff, how did they come to these conclusions?
Right.
So that's the real question is, you know, how do they understand, come to these conclusions? What was their thinking that allowed them to do that?
Yeah. So, you know, Bruce, it's a great question. That's really, if there was a definitive answer to that, it would have stopped a lot of debates throughout the ages. But I'll give you what the traditional answer is, and if it satisfies you, it does. If it doesn't, then we'll be in the same boat. Essentially, the same way for halacha, we believe that there is a Masorah, there is a tradition, the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, passed along a tradition of how to interpret the Torah to the ensuing generations, there's a similar belief that theological principles got passed along from generation to generation, and that when the rabbis looked at certain verses, they knew that verse means something halachically. They also knew to look at other verses and understand what the theological implications were. So at a certain point, you need to kind of believe that it goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu and that there is a Masorah for it. Otherwise, you're right. You know, otherwise, they're just looking in the Torah the same way anyone else would be. But if we believe that they were given the right tools to understand what the Torah is talking about, then that answers why Ramban would be so mech. He would rely on rabbinic texts because they are closer to Har Sinai and they have a clearer idea of what Jewish theology believes on certain matters.
So okay, thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. Did anyone else have any questions, any stones unturned that we need to address before you go on to Gan Eden? Okay. Well, Bruce, that was a really good question, and it's not just pertinent to Gehenna. It's pertinent, really, to our entire enterprise of studying Jewish theology. So I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, can you see, can everyone see over here that I switched the PDFs to Binyan Gan Eden, where I'm highlighting now? Did it change when I changed?
Okay, yes.
Okay, sometimes I have trouble with them when I switch documents. All right, well, it's what it says. Binyan Gan Eden. We're going to talk about Gan Eden. So the first thing we need to talk about is Gan Eden versus Olam Haba. Gan Eden means the Garden of Eden. Olam Haba means the world to come. Before I make us biased by telling you what the Ramban says, what would your understanding be if you had to define what the Garden of Eden is and what the world to come is? So I'm not going to translate these terms, so I'm just going to translate them now. Because we're going to say them so many times. Gan Eden is Garden of Eden. Olam Haba is the world to come. And if anyone forgets, you can always ask me to retranslate. But it's going to come up a lot. So those are the two key terms for this section.
So to me, Gan Eden means in this world. Mm-hmm. This world. Ah. The current world.
Now what makes you say
Olam
that?
Olam Haba means the next world. When we pass away.
Now, what makes you say that Gan Eden is this world and that the Olam Haba is the next world? Where do you see that?
Well, Gan Eden is in the beginning of Bereishit, and it applied to this world.
Ah, very good. So what Bruce says is as follows. Hey, wait a minute. Gan Eden is in the Torah. If you look in Parshas Bereishis, which we read very recently, Adam and Eve, they're here on earth. They get kicked out of the Garden of Eden. They go somewhere else on earth. So it sounds like Gan Eden is a real physical place that should be accessible in this world, right? And Olam Haba, like you said, Bruce, is the world to come, which sounds pretty obvious. It means the world to come, not this world. So I think you're right, though. I'll spoil things a little bit for us. This is going to come later on. But what Ramban is going to posit is that there are two Gan Edens. There is the Gan Eden of this world and the Gan Eden of next world, which, Mehechi Tesi, where does he get that from? Because there's only one Gan Eden mentioned in the Torah. But for argument's sake, I don't want to wait till we get to that point because I know we're going to have that question beforehand. So I'm preempting the question. There is a Gan Eden in this world, a physical one, and there's a Gan Eden in the spiritual metaphysical realm. And what Ramban is going to focus on for now is the Gan Eden of the metaphysical realm. So keep that in mind as we see this first paragraph. So we just spent a lot of time talking about all the different punishments that people get. And may the Lord save us from them. Well, okay. You know what? We made it through Gehenna finally, figuratively speaking. Now let's talk about the reward that is given. You know, God willing, we should get this. So there are two names given to the place of ultimate reward. One is Gan Eden and one is Olam Haba. These are in addition to anything that any reward that we receive in this world. Because chronologically, there is the era of the Messiah, the era of Mashiach. Mashiach takes place in this world. Mashiach is here. And there's also a revival, there's a reincarnation of the dead that takes place during Mashiach. There's a little bit of a discussion about that. the initial reincarnation might be for the tzaddikim, for the righteous, and then other people get it later on as we enter Olam Haba. But that is all the reward that we get in this world. So for those who are still alive, or those who get reincarnated, they get some reward during Mashiach. But she'en anu medavrim ata behem. But Ramban says, suffice to say what I just said, but we're going to leave that for now. What we're going to talk about is the reward that we get in the other world. Utchila nemar sheschar ha-mitzvos kulan v'agmul ha-tosh lehem davar pashut hu b'divrei Rav Asina zichronam livracha she'ikar gadol hu chai olam haba. It is obvious that if you look around rabbinic literature, the ultimate reward that one receives is meant for the world to come, is meant for the future, is not meant for this very world. Avol haschar hakodem, but any reward that we receive prior to that, pumay she'agila adam achrei hamavas miyad, that which we get after death, hu gan eden. In other words, there is olam haba, the world to come, which is all of eternity. But let's say somebody dies, like anyone basically up until this point dies. So you can't go to Olam Haba because Olam Haba is not available yet. It's not ready. But there is a temporary place which is likened to Olam Haba called Gan Eden. And there in Gan Eden, if someone dies before Mashiach, I mean before everyone gets revived, then that's where they go in the meanwhile. The same way we explained when it came to Gehenna. If we recall, we were just talking about this, when a wicked person dies, they go straight to Gehenna. And when a righteous person dies, they go straight to Gan Eden, where they begin to receive their ultimate reward. That's the first idea that comes out, is that there's a Gan Eden, there's a Gehenna, and those who are righteous, they get to go straight to Gan Eden. Now, let's see, should we go further, or there is a footnote, there is something I wanted to share over here. I can just find it. And, you know what, we'll go a little forward first, actually. The Raya Gan Eden Tzadikim Hu Hepech Gehenna L'Shem. We're going to talk about, we're going to compare and contrast Gan Eden to Gehenna now. We're going to see now numerous statements from the rabbis. This is going to be a great proof, a great example of what I was talking about before, that Ramban is rooted in the sources. So he's going to give us a lot of sources in Chazal, in rabbinic literature, where we see that Gan Eden and Gehenna are contrasted with each other. Moshe Amr Be'erevin, so in the Gemara in Erevin it says, Yafa Danta, Yafa Takanta, Gehenna L'Rishayim, V'Gan Eden L'Tzadikim. So, God, it is good that you created Gehenna for the wicked, you've created Gan Eden for the righteous. That's a pretty explicit contrast. V'amru B'Meseches Chagiga, and it says in the Gemara in Chagiga, Mai D'Chsev, why is it saying Koheles, Gam Ezeh L'Umazeh Asa Elokim, this one you made opposite this one. Why did God make it so? Bara tzadikim, bara shayim. God created people who ultimately became righteous. God created people who ultimately chose to become wicked. Bara Gan Eden, bara Gehenna. And therefore, God created Gan Eden. God created Gehenna. Kol echav echad yesh lo shnei chalakim. And in each person, there are two chalakim. This is an important line that we're going to elaborate on. Echad began Eden. Each person, when we are born and we are put into this world, we have a chelek, we have a seat waiting for us in Gan Eden, and we have a spot waiting for us in Gehenna. Zocha tzaddik notel chelko b'chelek chavero. So when a tzaddik, when an exceedingly righteous person earns his place, he not only gets his seat, his merit that is waiting for him in Gan Eden, but he gets the portion of his friend in Gan Eden as well, who is a Rasha. And his Chayiv Rasha, when the wicked is punished, notel chelko v'chelek haver b'Gehenna. He not only gets the punishment waiting for him in the world to come, but he also gets the punishment of his friend, who is a righteous person as well. Now, I could see some of us are looking at us like, what the heck is going on? What is that supposed to mean? Right, Toby? So what do you make of this? Well, what do you find problematic about this, rather?
Everything.
Okay, so I'll try to maybe explain what is bothering us here, and you'll tell me if I'm touching on that. What's bothering me here is, why is it, you know, I don't get it. I have my place in Gehenna, and I have my place in Gan Eden. So God will either put me in Gehenna, or he'll put me in Gan Eden. What's the deal with me getting another person's chelek along with it? What, am I stealing someone else's chelek when I do my mitzvahs? That doesn't make any sense. And a wicked person, he should only get the punishment that he earned in Gehenna. Why does he get my punishments as well? None of this seems fair. None of this seems proportionate. Where's the justice in this? Does that speak a little bit to what's bothering us?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you know what? It's not only we weren't the first ones to be bothered by this, but if you look, there's a nice piece. I was bothered by it, and so I looked in the Chazon Yo, who also was bothered by it. So we're all bothered by it together. And the good news is that there is an answer to this question, which will probably take us the rest of this class. So buckle up. It looks like I'm glad that we're bothered by the question, because now I know it's a good investment of time to try to solve it. Okay. Does anyone want me to clarify the issue here before we jump into it? Actually, better yet, the first paragraph does. Tzarech bir, eich shayich lomar shekol ech ve'echad yeshel beis chalakin. What's the deal? How does anyone have two chalakin, two portions? Al v'gan eden v'al v'gehenem. One in Gan Eden, one in Gehenem. How does someone take away someone else's portion? And he says, as Toby, I think, meant to put it, all of this is a wonderment. None of this makes sense to me. Right? So we're all in the same boat over here. So what he's going to do is he's going to present looks like three different approaches to answer what is going on over here. So here we go. This is a source that gets quoted a lot, actually. So this is Ramchal. Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. He's most famous, I think, 18th century, if I'm not mistaken. So he's actually more recent. He's not a medieval scholar. He's a more recent scholar. So Ramchal is most famous for writing Maseilas Yesharim, which is one of the most famous Musar ethical works. But he also was a little bit of a theologian / Kabbalist. So he gets quoted in Chazon Yoel a lot. He says as follows. Tikun HaBriya Chilek Oso Adon Baruch Hu Bein Kol Neshamos Asher Osa L'Avdim. When we are put in this world, or rather this life, Nikva Chilek Kol Neshamos Tikun HaBriya, each person in this world is designated to fix the world when they're put into it, right? Now, this is a good source. If I was a Reform rabbi, this like would be a great source to know. It's a good source for anyone to know. But here's a mentioning of Tikkun Olam. So he says that each person is put into this world, their soul is put here for the purpose of Tikkun Olam, for the purpose of repairing and fixing this world that we are put into. For those who were on the Zoom call for Rabbi Cohen's grandson's bris, he quoted a Gemara, or a Medrash, which was a dispute between Rabbi Akiva and Turnus Rufus. So Rabbi Akiva would have theological debates with Turnus Rufus, and Turnus Rufus was basically this just Greek theologian, this guy who liked to pester Rabbi Akiva with theological questions, where he tried to undermine Jewish belief. So there's a whole conversation that takes place where he keeps asking Rabbi Akiva, well, why did God make the world this way? And Rabbi Akiva says, oh, he did this so we could do that. And the end of the whole conversation, for instance, he asks, why is it that God gave us wheat and he gave us grain? He didn't just give us bread right away. So the answer is, well, God wanted us to be partners with him. So therefore, God gave us the raw material, but God wants us to take that raw material and put it into a perfected state. Similarly, why is a boy not born circumcised? Why is he born with a foreskin? So Rabbi Akiva said, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu ratzal tzarif es habriyos, God wanted to purify us, and he wanted to enable us to partner with him in creation. So therefore, God gives us a world that has the potential to be perfected, and then we are charged with the mitzvah of perfecting an imperfected world as partners in creation with God. That is the mission of someone when they are put in this world. And the reward that we get for fulfilling this mission is called the portion that I receive, Gan Eden. And therefore, if Shimon fails to perform his part in fixing this world, his mission in bringing good into the world, he's making the tzaddik do extra work. Because when he doesn't pull his weight, it means all the righteous people need to do more work. They need to do more work in order to make up for his washless, his negligence. So what does it mean that a righteous person takes the portion of the wicked person? Well, it makes sense when you think about it in these terms. Because if both Reuven and Shimon are given a mission to bring goodness into this world, Shimon neglects his duties, and then Reuven fulfills them, then Reuven fulfilled Shimon's mission. Therefore, Reuven, in addition to fulfilling his mission and getting reward for that, if he had to go an extra mile to make up for what Shimon neglected to fulfill, then it's only right that Reuven gets Shimon's portion as well. Now, I don't think it's literally working. It's not like, if I fail to do my work in this world, I don't know if it has a direct effect on how much work Audrey needs to do in this world. I don't think it's like an easy tit for tat, like the way he's spelling it out. But he's saying in the grand scheme of things, we have a collective responsibility to heal this world. And if people neglect to fill their mission, which unfortunately happens, it makes it harder for the rest of the good people in the world to perfect the world. Therefore, since it makes our work in this world more difficult, therefore we get proportionate reward for the difficulty and for the effort that we invested into performing that. That's what it means that a righteous person gets the reward of a wicked person. That's what he takes his chelek in Gan Eden. So what do we make of that? Toby, I know you're the one who is very bothered by this question. So do you think that this begins to give some form of an answer to make sense of that statement that we saw above?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. Well, is there
anything? I have to think about it more.
What was that?
I have to think about it more.
Sure, that's good. It's always good to rush to judgment. So we'll take a moment to think and process this over. In fact, actually, the next part is a little bit more involved. So let me set us up for next time, and I'll tell you what we're going to do. There were two statements we saw. We just answered only the first part. We said the righteous person takes the portion of the wicked person in Gan Eden. So we made sense of that just now, or I'll let you judge if we made sense of it. But the answer is that we gave is that, well, if he fulfills his mission in this world, he gets the reward that was designated for him. And if he also makes up for the work that the wicked person didn't fulfill, he gets his reward too. I mean, I guess it's not really how it works on like a group project, back in college. But that's since God is the true judge, he knows truly who is pulling their weight on the project and I don't know if you guys remember, I mean, this could happen in corporate settings also, where there's like that one guy who kind of just doesn't do the work and then he offers to give the presentation at the end of the day. You don't do any of the work, you didn't do any of the research, you didn't put together any of the slides. You're like, yeah, I'll volunteer to give the presentation in the end, which is, I think that's the easiest part, is just presenting the material in the slideshow once everyone did the work for you. So when the college professor is assessing who did the work and who didn't, he just gives one flat grade for everybody. But since HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a true judge, and he could discern who really pulled their weight and who didn't, therefore God is actually able to assign specific grades to people based on how much work they put into it, which is really the way things ought to be, but unfortunately humans are just limited on what they can do. So that's really how we understand the first statement. Though we did not answer how we understand the latter half of this sentence, that the wicked person takes the portion of the righteous person in Gehenna. So again, I mean, this doesn't answer the second part. The second part is that the wicked person gets additional punishment on top of what he did, but that's not fair. Look, I get it. He loses his portion. He loses some of his reward in the world to come in Gan Eden because he forfeited it by not fulfilling his mission in this world. But why should that mean that he gets extra punishment on top of what he committed? That still doesn't make any sense. And Rabosai, I think we'll leave this one on a cliffhanger because there's three answers to this, and I don't want to just rush it and squeeze it into 3 minutes. So what we'll do is we'll process the first answer for the time being about Gan Eden and how the righteous get the portion of the wicked in Gan Eden. And God willing, next time we'll address what is the deal? How do we begin to make sense of why the wicked get the portion of the righteous in Gehenna as well, in addition to what they deserve? They don't deserve more than that. So that's what we will, Bezus Hashem, address next time as well. Any other questions or thoughts before we conclude? Okay, wonderful. Yashar Koach, everyone, for joining. Dawn, it's good to see you as well. And have a wonderful morning. Toby, I guess I'll see you.
You too.
Yeah.
You too, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.